Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your co-host, Steve K9 Kim, and joining me, as always, from the beautiful city of San Francisco, where his heart currently is, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. Gabe, good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you, sir. Man, that was a little scarier than I'll let you know, logging into the show today. Blog Talk don't fail us now. It's free, though, so, you know, I'm not going to complain. How you doing on this Monday?
I am doing very well. We have a bevy, yes, a bevy of boxing despite the holiday weekend. If you want to call in, we'll take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. Those digits, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. And we want to remind our great listeners, this show, the next round, is brought to you by the Iron Gym located at 14548 Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks, California. The number to the Iron Gym, 818-322-4627. And again, we will be here for at least 90 minutes, all the way up to 2 hours, depending on your participation. But let's get started with round number one. And as Gabe Montoya said, it was free! The PBC in Boston, Massachusetts on NBC, and the new IBF Super Middleweight Champion of the World, James Chunky DeGale, moves to 21-1, outpointing Andre Durrell, who drops to 24-2. Your scores, 114-112 twice, and one score, 117-109. Gabe, I think it's pretty simple. I think both guys make an argument that they won at least 5 to 7 rounds, but when one guy scores 2 knockdowns, it's hard to overcome that. I think the judges, especially the ones who had it 114-112, I think they got it right.
No, I think they did. You know, each guy can make an argument that they won 5 or 6 rounds. The fans, though, we won one round, I think, the round with the knockdowns in it. Everything else was a little grim. I actually liked the first round from DeGale. I thought he fought exactly how he should have fought the whole time. He really just took it to Durrell, closed the distance, and he decided he was the power puncher in this, which is kind of a factor I didn't really see in this. I didn't think anybody's power would be overwhelming in this fight. I thought both guys would kind of even each other out. Boy, he put him down. But this is the reason why I picked Durrell, is that DeGale, he starts fast, and then he kind of falls all apart. He puts offense on layaway, and he doesn't finish at this level very well. I mean, look what he did. He had a guy as hurt as you could get him, and he didn't go after him in the next round. He kind of let Durrell get back into the fight, and he bored me to tears when you know, I thought, wow, this is going to be a good fight. Ultimately, it really wasn't.
Yeah, according to the PBC pom-pom waivers, this was their version of Ben McClellan. And literally, you take away the second round, it was a lot of nothing. It was, as the old-timers would say, one guy was afraid and the other guy was happy for it. And James DeGale, going back to the George Groves fight, you always got the sense he left money on the table. And I think that's the story with James DeGale. It's not about the skill. It really is about the will. And I thought in the middle half of that fight, or the middle portion, he could have completely taken over and dominated this fight. But instead, as he backs up, he lets Andre Durrell settle back down, regain his legs, unfurl that long jab, and he's waiting on the outside, circling the perimeter, and one round at a time, Andre Durrell, to his credit, gets back into the fight. Now, my personal opinion is the last 2 rounds, I thought DeGale salted it away, especially in the 12th, but that's the thing about James DeGale. It's not about the talent, but truly, Gabe, there's a question mark in terms of the temperament, because this is a very talented fighter. You always get the sense he'll leave you wanting just a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I think Carl Froch broke it down afterwards. And, you know, he doesn't have any skin in this particular game or anything, but he didn't have a lot of good things to say about De Gea. He was like, look, he looked great early on, but he left a lot of money on the table. It's why I picked against him. He's not a guy that – and he was actually proving me wrong early on, but then he just went away. He's not a guy that is going to, you know, jab you consistently, peck away at you, and break you down. He's happy to get you in spots, and certainly there was adjustments being made, but to me, it's not like Darrell is that much of a defensive problem to solve, especially if you put him down. You don't start winging big shots. You just start looking to set those shots up, and that just kept going away from De Gea. He'd pick it up maybe at the end of a round. He was happy to kind of be on the outside or be right in front, but stay on the outside of a fight and then kind of attack and get the first last 30 seconds. Just wasn't enough to get it done. I did think he closed stronger, but hopefully for him, he looks at this fight and he just says, look, these are the mistakes I made. This is how we build. You know, this is his first title fight. There was a lot on the line here to be the first, you know, British Olympian to also pick up a title at that weight. It was a big moment for him. And maybe, you know, he burned off a little bit of adrenaline and more energy than he had hoped. I can understand that. I think he needs to come back and come back strong. I don't think he'll change, though. I mean, at his age, at his experience level, I think this is who he is. But and coming away from it with both guys, neither guy made me go, boy, I really want to see them fight again. Like, I didn't feel about that way going in, and I certainly didn't feel that way going out.
To your point, Mr. Montoya, not only did he have a long, distinguished amateur career, which was capped off by a gold medal, he's now in the thick of his professional run. He's 29 years old. The die is cast.
Right.
He is what he is. And it reminds me of kind of that fight like with B.J. Saunders against Chris Eubank Jr. And to me, that was very reminiscent of Groves De Gea. The more talented guy was not willing to give as much of himself as the less talented guy who ended up winning the fight. Now, Andre Durrell, I give him credit. He dusted himself off, but I thought he was allowed to get back into the fight. And as I'm watching this on TV, I'm just wondering, why isn't De Gea's corner going to the whip? Maybe that's not their style. Maybe they know what they have. But I thought this fight could have been much easier for De Gea. But when it was all said and done, as we said, mm-hmm. I think the right guy got his hands raised in victory. This is the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. We want to remind you, if you want to hit us with a tweet, with a question or comment, you could do so at @SteveUCNLive and @Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, moving on with our British theme, round number two from the O2 Arena in London, England. For the WBC lightweight title, Jorge Linares defends against Kevin Mitchell. For the IBF featherweight strap, Evgeny Gradovich takes on Lee Selby. Welterweights in action, Special K, he's not just a serial. Kell Brook takes on Frankie Gavin. And then heavyweights in action, Anthony Joshua squares off against Kevin Johnson. Gabe, it's really a shame that as of right now, it doesn't look like there will be stateside television for this. Because I think top to bottom, this is a very, very solid bill being put on by Eddie Hearn.
Oh, this is as good as it gets. I mean, you know, when people talk about that other, the fight of the century, that we need more fights like this. You know, I was looking at, like, De Gea and thinking, you know, we need to actually – that's actually, to me, De Gea winning that title, Kell Brook winning his title, beating Al Haymon fighters to do it. That's better for the sport than any fight of the century that costs $100. And the reason why is not just the failure of Al Haymon, or what we call the mandatory curse – because he doesn't seem to be able to get past mandatories with his fighters. But it's that here are two guys in De Gea and Brook who are going to be promoted regionally. They're going to be promoted according to their strengths. And then off of that, a brand will be built. And hopefully you'll see things like this. You know, where at the O2 Arena, there's going to be a rabid crowd out there, hardcore boxing fans, guys cheering for guys from their regions. It's going to be a celebration day for boxing. This is what it's all about. And you know what? Fight fans can actually get tickets to this. And just top to bottom, you've got all different flavors of fights. It's great.
Before we go down to the fights one by one, with Jamie McDonald, Kell Brook, and James De Gea, matchroom fighters in the last year in title fights which were mandated by a sanctioning body, those evil, despicable, wretched people. Eddie Hearn is 3-0. Gabe, That's the real modern-day hitman. Moving on to the fights, Linares Mitchell, Gabe. You know, I've been driving the Linares bandwagon for many years now. Even if it's careened off the road and wrapped itself around a telephone pole and the wheels have fallen off, I've always believed in this guy's talent. I think he's especially gifted, but specifically flawed. I think he's much more talented than Kevin Mitchell. I think he's a little bit fresher fighter. But again, it could all change with one shot. But Gabe, put me in that driver's seat. I think Linares comes out of there retaining his WBC title.
Yeah, look, you're talking to a James Kirkland fan, so I understand, you know, rolling with your flawed guy. But I think, you know, Kirkland is no Linares. The guy's gifted offensively. He throws beautiful combinations. He's a beautiful pure boxer in a lot of ways. I think they've got a good style for him here, and I think the amount of experience that he's had in his losses in just his travels, I think is going to serve him well here. And I think you're right. I think Mitchell's got some miles on him. I think but more than that, he's got the right style on him for Linares to shine offensively. If Linares doesn't let this become a physical contest, doesn't let it end up in the corner or let it end up on the ropes, but keeps the circle game going, moving either side and just keeping the right range behind his jab, setting up those combinations, I think he takes the decision and takes it comfortably.
But, Gabe, the British are coming. The British are coming. I've got Lee Selby over Evgeny Gradovich, and I'll tell you why. Gradovich has a relatively simple style. I've said before, you don't need MapQuest to find him. He's always there. Punches a lot, but he doesn't punch hard. Lee Selby's a pretty skilled guy, and Gabe, as was proven by the Jason Velez fight, you don't have to be necessarily great to be competitive with him. And Gradovich's style and his overall talent level is made for fights like this for him to give up his belt. I think Lee Selby is well prepared. I think he's a seasoned veteran. Gabe, I think we have a new champion here with the IBF featherweight crown.
Oh, wow. Wow. Is that an upset special? Or I guess
it might be.
Right,
I don't
there.
Know what the odds are. But I'm going with the Union Jack. Jack.
Well, I think he's going to get the benefit of the doubt over there. That's for sure. Gradovich has got to close the distance. Neither guy is really the puncher in this. You know, you got, what, 8 knockouts and 9 knockouts for each guy. But I just think, you know, a guy that kind of goes draw with the Jason Velez, I'm not sure if he's going to go overseas and really get it done. If you get a draw, you know, or you go in deep with Billy Dibb, I just don't see how you go overseas and you're successful. So I'll probably stick with you on that, Lee Selby. This is kind of more of a toss-up match for me, but I'll lean with Lee Selby by decision on this one, getting all the benefits.
Yeah, and Kell Brook, I think, is just a cut above Frankie Gavin. I think Kell Brook is really a solid all-around practitioner, and I love the fact he's very active, no matter what you think of Frankie Gavin. Gabe, as it relates to Anthony Joshua, he's 25 years old, Olympic gold medalist. He has the look. He's chiseled out of stone. He just looks like what you would envision in a 21st century heavyweight. And at 12-0, he's taking on Kevin Johnson. I know even some of the British fans are questioning how fast or slow Joshua is being moved. Gabe, I think Eddie Hearn is doing a perfect job, in my opinion, of pacing Anthony Joshua. Heavyweights, they develop slower, they mature later. I think at 12-0, facing a guy that's as seasoned and as savvy as Kevin Johnson, I think this is exactly the right fight at exactly the right time.
Yeah, just real quick on Brook and Gavin. I think Gavin's going to make Brook look even more spectacular. The right hand's going to be showcased. He's facing a southpaw. I liked Gavin early on. Something happened. I don't know what happened, but he kind of fell off. It's like the desire or something. But I think he gets beat up, and I think he gets stopped in this fight by Kell Brook, who looks spectacular. I think he's on the cusp of, to me, being the most dangerous welterweight out there, the most complete. But, you know, I think Joshua, like you said, they're bringing him along nice and slow. I think Johnson's doing his job. You know, and writers will do theirs in celebrating his jab. Scott Christ over Bad Love Hook was saying they'll bring up that storyline. I think Joshua gets him out of there. I think he maybe gets extended a bit because of the experience of Johnson, which I think is a great thing for him. The guy needs rounds. He doesn't need knockouts right now. He needs to be in with experienced guys who will ask questions of him he doesn't know the answer to until they're asked. I think it's a good fight for him, but I don't think he's smoking mirrors by any means. Like I said before, and I still got to stand by this, The more evidence is coming in, but I'd rather buy stock in Anthony Joshua than Deontay Wilder, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, and the other thing that we cannot mask, and I hope it doesn't camouflage, that even with the gold medal, Anthony Joshua had a relatively short amateur career. He is still learning on the job, and what I've loved about what they've done with him, they've kept him active, and they've kept him busy. And I know that they are loath to look ahead, but looking on BoxRec, they already have another date for him lined up for July 18th. To me, I wish more fighters would be this active. I think Anthony Joshua, again, we're going to find out if he's more Frank Bruno or Lennox Lewis. But to me, he is like a stock that you would buy hand over fist. Moving on with more next round in our first segment. Again, if you want to call in, that number, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you can do so at SteveUCNLive or at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, Gennady Golovkin, Carl Froch, are they just toying with our emotions right now? Everyone involved, Eddie Hearn, Tom Loeffler, Mr. Froch, and Gennady Golovkin?
I hope not. I think if Froch is allowing it to get out there that he's interested in the fight, I think it happens. It just seems to me that it's at this stage he wants to take a calculated risk. He wants to, if he's going to fight somebody his size, then it's going to be Chavez Jr. If he fights a bigger name that's a puncher, then it's certainly going to be somebody coming up 8 pounds that's never been there before. I wonder if they'll do a catch weight. I doubt it, but I think it's a great event for boxing. I think Triple G going over there fighting Carl Froch, showing that he is once again a true champion, a true world champion. And their styles, I just think, will mesh. I mean, I think Carl can lay some hands on Triple G, but I think he might play a game of long-range keep away, try to take into the deeper rounds, and then start putting some power shots together. I think it's a great fight. I feel almost like it can't miss, although Ward Froch wasn't exactly the most exciting fight in the world, but I'll look at the constant factor in that one. Andre Ward's fights aren't exciting. Carl Froch generally is. Triple G generally is exciting, so to me, it's a great fight. I really hope they're not toying with us like this.
Yeah, here's the reality, though. Carl Froch said, for my final fight, my farewell, before I walk into the Nottingham sunset, I wanted a Las Vegas pay-per-view fight against a marquee name. And Julio Cesar Chavez, no matter what you say about him, fit the bill perfectly because he was a draw, he's Mexican, and let's face it, very good style for Carl Froch. Now, Gennady Golovkin, according to Tom Loeffler, who I emailed while he was in Russia this past week, said, listen, we're willing, unlike certain people, a certain guy from Oakland, they are willing to go to the UK. They are willing to fight at 168, and the fight can be on HBO, does not have to be pay-per-view. That's great that they're willing to make concessions on their end, Gabe, but the equation, risk versus reward, you just wonder, with Froch, who has everything to lose here in this situation, because his legacy is set. He's going to the Hall of Fame, 2 victories over an arch rival in George Groves. And did you know that he knocked out Groves in front of 80,000 people, Gabe? Yeah, just ask him. He'll tell you all about
that.
It. Yeah, he'll tell you about it, though, if you ever run into him. So I don't know. It's one of those things where, and someone brought this up to me from the UK that's very well-versed. He said to me via DM, he said, Steve, I really believe that Carl Froch is saying all this stuff at this particular time to take focus away from James DeGale, who he has no love for. So that might be another factor. And I've been told by the same source that I trust, Carl Froch is very well off financially, that if he never fought another day and never made another dime in the squared ring, he'd be okay. So again, let's cross our fingers. But if you're going to put this on the calendar, do it in a number 2 pencil, not in ink. This is the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. If you want to call in, we'll take your calls in about 2 minutes here, 347-215-7598. We're here for at least another 70 minutes, all the way up to 2 hours. Let's go to some tweets. Here's from the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. Do you think Al gets upset when one of his own loses? Or do you think he could care less as long as the brand does well, Gabe? Interesting question.
It's about the brand. Yeah, I mean, I think it's about the brand. It's sort of like, you know, I was thinking about, like, why is this, you know, in Boston? Why, you know, is that, did it do well? You know, what are the numbers? And I wonder if any of that's really important until the second time we come back around, and then we have something to compare it to. You know, did they do better? I think really, I mean, you sign 150 guys. It's pretty clear, you know, like I talked to Frank Gore this weekend. He now is co-managing Willie Nelson. And I said, is this the beginning of, you know, Frank Gore Promotions or, you know, this giant management firm? And he's like, no, I'm pretty much just going to work on the one fighter for right now. That's what interests me. With Al, he's got 150. So I think the answer is clear. It's about the brand.
Gabe, I agree with you and I don't agree with you. I think it is about the brand, but it's about the brand when one Heyman fighter is losing to another Heyman fighter. These titles are still important because they give you a certain type of prestige that, hey, I am a champion. Andre Durrell cannot say that. And the way you legitimize the PBC belts is by having Al Heyman fighters dump the regular belts. Now, when you're losing to Kell Brook, who he has nothing to do with, or Jamie McDonald, and most recently a DeGale, it hurts the brand because it almost makes it sound like it's the AAA of boxing. And this goes into the next question via Twitter. Do you think Al has options on fighters that have beaten his, i.e. DeGale and Brook? By rules of the IBF and other sanctioning bodies, Gabe, and I think even with the Muhammad Ali Act, which, of course, Al Heyman would never, ever go around, in a mandatory situation, which these fights were, you are not allowed to get options. You can give them up, but you're really not allowed to get them. So, no, DeGale and Brook, they are free and clear with Mr. Eddie Hearn.
Yeah, no, I think that's, you know, when people look at the belts, it's one of the many reasons they're relevant and that they're needed. It's at least a checks and balance. I mean, just the fight itself. I like the fact that, you know, we could say a lot about the PBC, but it seems like the judging, that's one thing we can't say, that the judging is awful. I mean, by and large, the A-sides have been winning. But every once in a while, you get one of these now, you know, which I think is like, again, it's great for the sport. I think it's even better when they don't have a belt. But here's the thing, you know, even though he doesn't have a belt, Andre Durrell could still be on free TV, and that might actually be better. Who knows?
Here's a question from Sammy Mills. When will the PBC need to make money? Guessing it's losing a lot. Well, my guess is that it is losing right now. I don't know how much. But, you know, everyone talks about this supposed $425 million in capital venture money. I've talked to people that know much more about this world than I do. And, Gabe, the biggest misunderstanding is in situations like this, you don't get that money all at once. What I've been told is that money is earmarked for certain times, and you have to hit certain benchmarks before more money is released to you. So I think that part of it is being misunderstood. It's not as if he has $425 million in his piggy bank right now. I do believe there's going to come a time relatively soon you're going to have to show a little bit of something and not just red ink.
Well, yeah. I mean, smarter business minds would know better than me. We'll see. I mean, I think maybe at least by the second go-around, the second season of this, they've got to show some sort of growth, some sort of improvement. But, I mean, you think about how long Al has been in the business, and we haven't really seen a big change in this. You know, we've seen way too many empty rooms that look obviously papered and not well papered at that. So his trend in boxing hasn't really changed. So I find it hard to believe that within a year it's going to change within the PBC, you know, if that makes sense. So I don't know. I'm not saying it's going to all fail, but going by how things have been going, it didn't look that great. We'll see.
Gabe, I knew people that were inside that venue in Boston this weekend. It was very sparse. And even that was papered with a lot of Boston College students or some Boston College students that were still in the area on this holiday weekend. And here's one from Boxing Reality. Frotch Golovkin is a great fight. Would love to see it. However, if Golovkin was to dominate Frotch at 168, wouldn't that make the big names at 160 avoid Gennady Golovkin even more? All the fights at 168 are with Heyman. Seems like it could actually hurt his career. My opinion is this, Gabe. If he dominates Frotch, which I don't think is a sure thing, I don't think that in any way can hurt Gennady Golovkin. I think at that point he has branded himself as one of the absolute marquee attractions and monsters in the sport.
If Carl Froch fights him and he's able to beat him and beat him spectacularly, I just don't think that a positive like that could be a negative. I mean, that's how stars are born. He should send him like a gift basket on the anniversary of the fight, like for the rest of his career. If a guy at Froch's level would deign to fight him and give him that opportunity, that's what Triple G needs. He needs a guy with a giant fan base, and there isn't anybody around him that's really willing to face him. Floyd's not going to pass his pay-per-view torch to anybody outside, I think, of the Heyman family. And he's certainly not going to go after a guy like Triple G. He needs a UK fighter for it to happen. Who else is there? Andre Ward?
Yeah, and with that said, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598, we're here for at least another hour and change, or we can go all the way up to 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Gabe, let's hit the phone lines.
All right, in the 503, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, it's Tyler from Oregon.
Good, how you doing?
Good. I'm not sure why you guys are bagging on the Yale Durrell fight. I thought I was actually pretty good, but to be fair, I only saw the first three rounds.
There you go.
I don't know, like, you know, especially the second round, that was pretty good, seeing Durrell put on his ass twice.
Well, if you cut it off there, it may have been one of the greatest things in the history of mankind. Unfortunately, me and Gabe actually saw the last nine. That changes our perspective.
Yeah. All right. Two questions. Who are your guys' early picks for the Scott Big Kiko Martinez fight?
Gabe?
What's that?
Kiko Martinez. Scott Quigg, Kiko Martinez, Gabe. Who are you picking?
Oh, Scott Quigg is. I think it's a pretty easy pick. That's actually not true. If Quigg can't take the power, then he's going to have a tough night. But I think Quigg can, and I think Quigg can outbox him like all night long. Kiko's a volume guy, but his punching frame is kind of wide, and I just think that Scott's going to shoot down the middle, and he's going to be able to just pivot off of him all night long. I remember watching, I think it was during the same summer we met Scott when he was over at the Wild Card, and his footwork is very underrated, and the way he's able to just kind of cut off, you know, throw a few punches and then just pivot off of that, I think is kind of special. People are sleeping on him a little bit. I think he'll rise to it. I think he dominates, maybe even a late stoppage, although I don't think of him as much of a puncher.
Gabe, I agree with you. And I think Quigg is just too sharp, as you mentioned. And Kiko Martinez was on a pretty good run there for a quick second. Some wear and tear now. And I just look at Scott Quigg as a much, much fresher fighter.
And
anything else we can do for you?
Yeah, I heard you guys talking about maybe Lucas Matisse having a fight in Argentina. Who are they looking at for him to fight in Argentina?
You know, I'm gonna have to make some calls this week. I don't think it's gonna be a monster. I mean, it's gonna be basically one of those homecomings, and I don't even think they're gonna do with a Martin Murray type level guy like Sergio Martinez. I think he's gonna return as the conquering hero, coming off the big victory over Provodnikov. I believe they could get a sizable crowd. And, you know, again, if HBO's not involved, common sense will tell you you don't need to take on King Kong here in this situation.
All right, thank you, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, if you only watch the first two, three rounds of the Gale Durrell, probably is Ben McClellan, Gabe. Problem is, there was the rest of the fight.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
when Durrell fights are on. Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, yeah, you can't really have an opinion of a fight if you haven't really watched it, unless you're, you know, Dan Raphael. 787, you're live on the next round. I know. I brought that back. 787?
Hello, guys.
What's up, man?
Do you hear
me?
How you doing? This is Javier.
Yes, we can.
The first doing, guy, man? I'm doing great. Guys, is the pact with Golden Boy and Fox Sports 1 ending? And if that's the case, what does it mean for all the Golden Boy fighters?
My understanding is that deal is coming to an end in July or August, and Golden Boy is going to have to adapt and adjust. It's very simple.
And two more things, guys. The first one, a lot of people are comparing the Gale fight with Cotto to the Trout fight. I know that Trout is a Malpo. A lot of people are comparing the Gale fight with Trout. I know, obviously, Trout is a southpaw, but stylistically, they say that Trout used to jab and move a lot, and that will give kind of problems. What's your take on that?
Well, I'll be honest, Gabe. Did you ever think to yourself, boy, Daniel Gill, when Cotto goes up against him, this is Austin Trout? I certainly never thought that.
I don't see that at all. I mean, I think they picked a guy that they can, like, get, you know, close the distance on, and it squares himself up a little bit. He moves, but, I mean, he doesn't move like Austin Trout moves, and he's fighting out of a completely different stance, and he's more prone to throw, you know, kind of brawl than anything. I guess maybe power? Is that what they're talking about? I don't see
it. Yeah, because he made a statement that he was going to move, and that Trout movement gave Cotto a lot of problems when they fight, and he's going to fight the exact same fight. That's what I meant. And I say, I don't see it. Daniel Gale is not Austin Trout. That's what I thought, but I see, maybe they see something that I don't. That's what I thought.
They must see something all of us don't. I got to be honest with you. You can make a lot of comparisons to certain fights because there are similarities in style. I'll be honest. I'm stunned by anyone that would say that Daniel Gill somehow equates to Austin Trout for Miguel Cotto, unless it's really about maybe misjudging who you should be fighting at this time. Because I'll go on the record again. I believe Daniel Gill will be a very tough out for Miguel Cotto.
And one last thing, guys. I know this fight is a couple of weeks away, and you probably will talk about it on an upcoming show. But what do you think about the Klimov-Pedraza fight? I saw Klimov fight Crawford on the night that Cotto beat Rodriguez, but he was so outclassed that it was difficult for me to really think what the Pedraza fight will look like. What's your take on that fight, guys?
I think it's a good fight. I think, you know, I got to be honest. I think Pedraza is better than I thought, and I do think he comes out with the title. I think he beats Klimov, Gabe.
He should. He's got the length to him, I think, you know. Just the size, dimensions, the styles kind of favor him. I like him. I've been that down on him. I think it feels like he should have more fights at 26. He should be more visible. But, you know, especially with his style, that he would have been pushed a little bit more. But I think, you know, I've never been big on Andrei Klimov. So he's a solid guy, good technique, but I think he gets beaten to the punch in this fight. I think that's who's first is going to be the big thing, and I think that's going to be Pedraza with that, with the jab, and then following, you know, adding to that with the 1-2.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Javier. As always, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. In a few minutes, we'll go through some news and notes and the fight review and fight preview here on the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. Gabe?
585, you're live on the next round. 585?
Hey, guys, it's Jake from State Farm.
Jake, what's going on?
What's up, man?
Regarding what you were saying about Frosch, Triple G, it's hard for me to believe. I mean, I don't know if you guys know Frosch personally, either of you, but it's hard for me to believe that his promoter and himself would be talking up this 80,000 people at Wembley again and get everyone, like, in a froth, considering the ego that Frosch has, and then kind of pull back just to take the attention away from a guy they don't like, or Frosch from a guy they don't like.
Yeah, you know, here's another issue, Gabe. I think people are I think they are not giving enough credit to George Groves for that 80,000. He brought at least half the fans, from my understanding. That was a very heated rivalry. As much as me and you and Jake from State Farm and the rest of our listeners maybe frothing at the mouth for Golovkin Frotch. I don't know. Does Gennady Golovkin bring that much of a constituency to Wembley Stadium?
That's a really good question. I don't know if he does. I was reading your column today, and you're posing that. That's a good question because, I mean, also, that, you know, that 80,000 people were there because it was a rematch of a good fight that had a crazy ending. And, yeah, and it was proven himself regionally by beating James DeGale. He'd moved to that next level. He just seemed like the guy. That fight kind of is the reason that fight did so well, that first fight. I don't know if Triple G does. I mean, he's been playing Monte Carlo, which is a small venue. You know, while I do like that he fights all year round and fights all over the world, I mean, he's not exactly playing stadiums overseas. So I wonder what he brings other than intrigue. Do you think even more of his? Is it more realistic to say that he's more of an American fighter in terms of his audience than he is overseas?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. I think the playing to Monaco now, I think they've outgrown that. And I've told this to Tom Loeffler in our conversations. Tom, if you're going to do Europe, you need to get out of a 900-seat room. And I think it's time to go to the UK. I know there are tax advantages to fighting in Monte Carlo, but things change, and I think you evolve. And if Gennady Golovkin is truly a global brand, well, they didn't stay in New York at all times, and now it looks like they're more based in the West Coast. I think it is time to head for bigger, larger frontiers for Golovkin in Europe. The Frotch fight to me is great in many respects, but there are some logistical issues in terms of the time zone differences where you'd have the fight. And also, is Frotch going to be reasonable in what he wants in terms of the slices of the pie, knowing that Gennady Golovkin is willing, more than willing, to be the B-side here?
Yeah, I mean, I hope it happens. If it does happen, I hope it doesn't happen at some sort of compromise where you just feel like Triple G's he's given up too much to get something this big. But it's not like Frotch is going to say, well, we'll meet at 166 or 167. Everything benefits him to be at the higher weight that he's used to. But he hasn't fought in a while. He hasn't made that weight. It's going to put some strain on him. So I'm curious. I mean, if they even do this at 68 or they do it above. I don't know. It probably is too good to be true. I'm trying to stay positive on it.
Yeah. Jake, anything else we can do for you?
X-Man versus Lomachenko is rumored to be in the works. I mean, A, do you think that's going to happen? And B, who do you guys like in that fight?
You know, that's a question better posed to Bob Arum and guys like Robert Middleman and who is it? Igas Klimas. Anything we say is a guess. Let's just put it that way. And as for who'd win the fight, you know what? Let's see the Axeman get through Miguel Mariaga. That's a real fight on June 13th at the Garden. So before we start mentally masturbating to fights, let's let June 13th happen.
I take Lomachenko in that fight. I just think that guy is great. I think he's got depth that we haven't seen. He just needs that competition in order to raise up to it, and he wants to, which I think is the most important thing. But yeah, I agree with Steve. That's a real fight. I don't know. I don't know if the Axeman needs to prove something even more to me. And that fight, I think, is going to do it. He's going to get hit a lot, and he's going to find out about his chin.
And he's going to get hit hard. Jake, thank you for the call. Here's a tweet from Andy Finlayson. How highly do you guys rate the card Eddie Hearn has put together this Saturday, and does Joshua stop the Kingpin? Gabe, I think you said it. It's about as good as it gets for boxing cards nowadays. I think top to bottom, and I'm looking at this card. Gabe, Linares Mitchell, Gradovich Selby, Brooke Gavin, Joshua Kevin Johnson. If you put any of those three fights and leave one of them out, and you said that's a boxing after dark triple header, Gabe, I think people in the States would be very excited, wouldn't they, to have that on their TV guide?
Killer card. Yeah, absolutely. No, this is a card with substance. You know, you've got Joshua facing pretty much his first really legit test. You know, a guy with experience that generally extends people. He's got that great jab. And he's going to have to deal with it. This is not, just kind of like a tough man contest or knocking out some random fat guy. You kill Brooke versus Frankie Gavin, again, this, you know, kind of regional fight, very exciting. You know, Gavin is a guy that he could rise to the challenge and make up that early promise. it's a crossroads fight, no doubt for him. And for Kell Brook, it's just, you know, it's another chance to prove that he is the best 147-pounder in the world. He should get the fight with Floyd Mayweather with the cases that he's making for himself lately. Sal Bogradovic, that's going to be all action. And I think it gets extended. I think it could go to late. It's just all – and you got Nathan Cleverley, gratuitous Nathan Cleverley, deep in the card. Like, you know, versus the dreaded TBA. It's got everything.
Here's a tweet from Jose Santa Cruz. ESPN has Cotto at number one in the middleweight rankings and GGG at two and number four in the pound-for-pound list. Do you agree? Well, number one, pound-for-pound, I can speak for Gabe. We don't give a damn. But anyone that has Cotto at number one, I think, is being a slave to a very draconian system of the whole linear title. Gabe, I don't care about lineal titles. I don't. My very simple definition of champion is this. Who's the most dangerous, who's the baddest guy out there, and who's doing the most work? And I think that applies at 175 with Sergey Kovalev, and I certainly believe that applies at 160 with Gennady Golovkin.
Yeah, I mean, really, boxing is a pretty simple sport, and figuring out who the best is, I think on its surface, much more simple than people want to make it with these ridiculous lists and fantasy rankings and all that stuff. If you're sitting in the barber shop talking about it, you know, we could break it down and we would determine not who's the lineal champ, but who's the man. And I think it's pretty clear, like you said, 175, it's very clear Sergey Kovalev is the man. And Triple G is adding belts. He wants to fight all comers, and not all comers want to fight him. That is clear indications that he is the man. Miguel Cotto is looking for catch weights. He's kind of like, I don't know. Let me see what I got to do here. And hemming and hawing. You know, either you're the man or you're not the man, and that is not the behavior of the man. So, no, I don't agree with ESPN.
347-215-7598. That's the number. Gabe, let's go back to the phone lines.
All right. 714, you're live on the next round.
Hey,
yikes.
It's Lenny and Five Smith. How you guys doing?
Good. What's going
hey,
on?
What's
Lenny
and Five Smith.
Lenny.
Hey, so I'm going to disagree with you guys. I'm going to disagree with you guys on DeGale. And Durrell. Just watching Durrell go down twice made the rest of the fight worth it for me. Just watching him out on his feet was fine by me. And I think DeGale gassed it a little bit. I think he tried, but he threw himself out. He punched himself out early in the fight, and then he did enough at the end to win. But the fight of the weekend, though, was Povetkin and Irish Mike Perez for me.
Nice. Well, you know what I found odd about Mike Perez, guys? He has this really good performance that turned out to be very tragic against Magomed Abdusalamov. And that's when he actually committed himself to a full camp in Big Bear with Abel Sanchez. And he's never done it again. He's always tried to cut corners. And I just don't understand it. The guy was on the doorstep of making some real money and having a real career. Commitment just was not there. But moving forward, Gabe, Lenny, I don't know if you agree with me. I think Povetkin, if he beats Wilder, I don't think that's necessarily an upset at all.
And he's got a deep amateur career. He's got, you know, the championship level experience. I'm not sure based on this win though that he beats Deontay Wilder because he's still got kind of a weak jab. I mean, he's got power. He looked explosive. I didn't really necessarily agree with people saying that he looked ridiculously more chiseled than ever before. I think the problem with him is he probably wasn't as committed as he needed to be in terms of his conditioning, and it looks like he's got a hold of that. I'd have to, you know, do some serious study of him, but I just think his front side is still kind of weak, and that he could be dominated with a long one too. With Deontay taking away the experience that Klitschko had, he still has the physical dimension problem, the physicality of the guy. All those problems still remain in the matchup. I think it would be something of an upset.
I can easily see Povetkin beat Wilder. I got to disagree with you, Gabe. I think Povetkin's a much better boxer, and I think the problems that he had with Klitschko don't really show up with Wilder. Wilder doesn't push guys' heads down. He doesn't kind of wrestle as much as Klitschko does. He doesn't use his length and size in the same way that Klitschko does. He kind of uses it more to punch, kind of keep the distance and keep his power from the distance. Klitschko just kind of grapples, and Povetkin had tons of trouble with it. I just don't see him having the same problems with Wilder. I mean, I don't think Wilder takes the fight.
So So you think that at the behest of Al Heyman that he becomes a quote-unquote PBC champion and dumps the WBC?
I mean, it would not surprise me one bit.
Those screams you hear come from Mexico City.
when he gets this PBC belt, I'm curious, is it free or are they going to be sanctioning by like sanctioning fees?
By the way, Lenny, I'm watching the show on Saturday, and the fight was okay. I mean, listen, did it go above and beyond a very low bar that we had for Darrell DeGale? I guess it did. But just watching that show, I just can't get over the fact it still has a very, very antiseptic feel to it. What are your thoughts as you watched this past weekend?
You know, this is like this was the first one that I watched live in a long time, and it feels like, and I think you guys have talked about it before. It feels like they're really just not going for a boxing audience. They're going for that Saturday afternoon guy that just kind of likes sport in general, and trying to pull him in. It doesn't seem like they're going for a boxing audience at all. That tutorial with BJ Flores and the other Darrell, it just seemed weird. It just didn't seem like a boxing event that I watched on TV in a long time.
And by the way, Gabe, here's the issue with that. The ratings on all their platforms have steadily declined. So I don't want to hear, well, they're building for a general audience. Okay, when does that start?
That's a good question. You know, I mean, how many of those guys that are taking, like, the white-collar boxing class are going to be excited enough to do that other than something else, you know, instead of something else on a Saturday morning or an evening, you know, prime time? It's tough, you know. I mean, our decline took so long. You know, we started in the 80s with, you know, pay cable and the move to Vegas. It took a while for us to get niche. It's going to be really hard to get us back to mainstream and making us regularly, you know, talked about. I don't know. I remember when the UFC went over to Fox, right? I mean, I'm not sure that did all that well. I'm not the biggest MMA, you know, critic in the world, but just because it's on network or mainstream TV doesn't mean it's instant success. It's got to do well. Shows get canceled all the time. So maybe it doesn't last longer than a year. Maybe will the ratings get so bad that those networks won't accept time buys anymore? Probably not. But we'll see.
More does not equal better, and free does not necessarily equate to good. And I just hear that so many times that it's free. So is government cheese. You know what? I'd rather pay for my Velveeta. Lenny, you're a local guy from the Southern California area. I know for a fact you go to fights, you buy tickets. What would it take to get you to June 6th at the StubHub for Robert Guerrero, Aaron Martinez at high noon?
Free appetizers and free tickets. I'm going to Bradley Vargas. I mean, I bought those tickets. Bradley's an all-action fighter now. Like his last few fights have been amazing. That's a fight that I want to see. Guerrero, I mean, the only reason Guerrero is in a good fight is because he's underperforming or he's just throwing haymakers at the end like he did against Keith Thurman and maybe landing a couple. It's just, and then the rest of the show is garbage.
You know what you
really
need to get me out
free
there?
Appetizers.
Free drinks, free appetizers, a limo ride there and back. I'm going to have to get more than Uber or Lyft. And free tickets to the June 27 show, which has added Humberto Soto against Ray Beltran, which I think is a very, very solid co-feature for HBO. Lenny, we got to get going, okay?
All right, thanks, guys.
When we come back, we'll get to some more news and notes, but let's hit the phone lines again, 347-215-7598. We're here till at least 8:30 Pacific time, Gabe.
I think you should order like a steady stream of root beer and goose to your station, you know, throughout the fights. But just put that
no doubt about it.
813, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's Jay out of Miami.
What's up, man?
Good, what's going on? Yes.
A couple things for you. One, is there any word on AWE or somebody picking up that May 30th card this weekend? I mean, it may be certainly on top to bottom the best card of this half of the year, and it'd be a shame to try to pick it up on some bootleg stream online.
Yeah, you know, I've asked, and I knew that AWE, I actually met Charles Herring on the Friday before the Golovkin fight, and he did say, I have had talks with Eddie Hearn, but as of right now, there's been no indication that they've actually struck a deal, which would be very unfortunate.
Wow. Wow. And you know, the last point, I'm getting sick of folks telling Golovkin to move up or wanting to see him go down to see Floyd, saying Floyd needs to fight Golovkin. Whenever anybody's saying Floyd needs to fight Golovkin or Golovkin needs to move up and fight Ward, what you're saying is, I want to see Golovkin lose or I want to see Floyd lose. I mean, it's such sort of, you know, fake arguments that I'm putting out because people think these fights are going to be good or want to see these fights happen. It's just they want the guy that they don't like to lose.
You know what I find amazing? And again, I'm just doing arithmetic here. Gennady Golovkin's last fight, he weighed in at 159. Ward is going to weigh in at a weight limit of 172. That is literally two weight divisions. And yet people insist Golovkin has to move up to face Ward. Yet you don't hear Ward, Kovalev, and they're literally 3 pounds apart. Gabe, that is mind-boggling to me.
It seems to me when it's a guy that's like a puncher, but that is not like your, you know, kind of stick-and-move boxer or like a guy that relies on like athleticism and speed, that everybody wants to see him get beat, that there's this feeling that, oh, well, he's not as good as Hopkins or a Mayweather. Like, Pacquiao got denigrated for not being a slickster, not having great defense. And Golovkin gets the same thing. It's like, well, they let go of the defense a little bit in order to give us more offense and more action fights. And then it's always those guys that have to do something ridiculous in order to get the big fight. It makes no sense to me. I'd rather watch both those guys than Andre Ward any day of the week. And I kind of like watching Andre Ward fight. I'm a rarity.
Hmm. All right, thank you for the call. Sounds like you're in a win tunnel. Please join us again. Gabe, going through some news and notes here. June 27th, a co-feature to Bradley Vargas at the StubHub Center, Humberto Soto, Ray Beltran, and rest assured, it's at 140. So I don't think there should be an issue. Gabe, this is a pretty solid opener for HBO, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll take that. You know, hopefully it's, yeah, he makes weight and everything. That's such a shame to see a guy. You know, he's a hard-working dude. We've seen him for years. And for him to be able to get to that point and feel like this is a matchup that's finally going to benefit me and not make weight, that had to be brutal. But I think this matchup's guaranteed action. I think it's going to probably not see the end of it. You know, we'll see. I mean, I don't think of him as a big puncher, but it's possible that he could get stopped. I mean, now that he's moving up, it gets a little more dangerous.
Gabe, thumbs up or thumbs down? The PBC on ESPN premieres July 11th, somewhere in Tampa. Keith Thurman, Louis Collazo, Willie Nelson, Tony Harrison. Gabe?
I like Harrison versus Nelson. I think that's a good fight. I watched Willie spar 6 rounds on Saturday and got to meet his new co-manager, Frank Gore. You know, and he looks good. He looks ready. I mean, they moved the fight back. Like, he was already in shape thinking his fight was going to be coming up sooner, and they moved it back like 7 weeks. So he seemed mildly annoyed by that, but at the same time, all the new stuff he's trying out here with the snack team and doing the sprint stuff with Remy, I think it's only going to benefit him. That fight could be explosive. I'm not sure about Tony Harrison. You know, I think he's a solid fighter, but you don't have that many fights and not have as much depth as I'd like in those in 20 fights he's got. It makes me wonder. You know, he clearly could punch, but can he take a punch? Can he deal with opposition? I'm trying to avoid giving an opinion on Thurman Collazo because everybody's been so down on it. You know, I'm on the fence. I mean, I just think if a guy's busy, then he's going to have this kind of fight on his record. And Thurman's been fairly busy. It did come off a tough quality fight. But, man, I mean, is it better because it's free, or is they giving it to us because it's free? It's kind of a crap fight in a sense. I mean, I don't know. It is what it is. I'm not excited about it, but it's not the end of boxing for me.
I like Nelson Harrison. I think it's a litmus test for Tony Harrison. We know that Mr. Kronk can pitch. We're going to find out if he can catch. We're going to find out a little bit something about his whiskers, I believe, as long as Willie Nelson doesn't get destroyed early. And I think Willie Nelson has to realize one thing here. Either win this fight or fight very well, or you're going to Opponentsville with or without Frank Gore. from, of course, the football factory at Coral Gables to you, Frank Gore. And as for Thurman Collazo, Collazo's a solid fighter, and I know people say that, Steve, he's not really a slickster. Here's my opinion. I think he knows he cannot be aggressive against one time, and I think he's going to be, no matter what his legs have left, I think you're going to see a much more defensive, circling the ring type of Collazo, and I think he'll be in survival mode relatively early. And for better or worse, I think it's going to look a lot like Thurman's fight against Carlos Quintana, where Quintana simply could not hold him off. And Gabe, newsflash. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. has a new trainer. This guy is worse than Daniel Snyder with Redskin coaches. I mean, basically Joe Goosen, for all his troubles, got embarrassed with a guy that quit. But hey, you know what, Gabe? At least he got a nice trip to Lake Tahoe out of it, right?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I mean, it's. I imagine among veteran trainers, when you get a job like this, they all kind of like, you know, you got to pay the bills. Like, screw it. I'll train a, you know, a famous rich kid for, you know, a fight and make that check and get out of there. It's probably a standard fee rather than your normal trainer fee. I just don't, you know, it's just kind of funny. This kid's undisciplined. Let's send him to the place where guys like miss weight all the time. I don't know. It's just, I don't know if that's the best recipe for success, you know. But Robert's a good trainer, and he's a nice balance of technical and aggression. And I think he hasn't quite found – I thought maybe Mikey Garcia would be his guy, but he hasn't quite found his fighter yet. And maybe in Chavez Jr. he can do something. I highly doubt it. I've just never been big on the kid.
Again, is Chavez Jr. going to act like the fighter who's going to willingly listen to his trainer and be compliant and say to Robert, where is your gym, whether it's in Riverside where he just opened up a new gym or Oxnard, whatever they decide. But none of this, I want to train in my kitchen or Lake Tahoe or at Big Bear Mountain on a ski resort or at the Taj Mahal. Boxing by nature is very tough. And the conditioning aspect and the work aspect and the training aspect is paramount. It's the very foundation of getting ready for a fight, okay? This guy takes so many shortcuts and corners, and I think there comes a point now this kid is toxic. I know for a fact he reached out to Freddie Roach not too long ago, and Freddie, who's been as patient as Job at certain times, said, ah, no thanks. You're better off going somewhere else. And that's kind of the way I look at it. And, again, what I found interesting was as this news broke yesterday on the Twitter sphere, I know people that know Robert Garcia very well. Gabe, Robert Garcia said that's news to me. Now, does this kid have such a sense of entitlement, and yes, that's a rhetorical question, that he literally believes people are lined up to pretend to train him? I guess so.
I guess so. I found that puzzling that when I read that. I was like, wow. Robert doesn't even know. But, you know, I wonder, you know, it's clear the kid's looking for answers. But I think, you know, why not go home? This is might just be pure blasphemy. Why not just go and talk to, you know, the Nacho Berastain and say, I want to start at the beginning. I want to learn how to freaking move. I mean,
isn't
Thomas
it too
Jr.
late, though?
The worst.
But, Gabe, isn't it too late, though?
Tell it to Rocky III, you know? I guess it is. Just thinking of, you know, the Carl Weathers.
Yeah, but hold on.
LA.
Rocky went to the ghettos of downtown L.A. with Apollo Creed. He made the sacrifice. Yeah. You see the hotel or that motel that him and Adrian were in? Come on. You literally, Bob Arum had
That's
to rent out a mansion for Chavez to train in Southern California. And I remember when Bob told me this. This is about 2-3 years ago. I said, Bob, that's all well and good, but what does it say about your fighter when you need to give him 4-star accommodations to do his job? And we're talking about a guy that once had Marvin Hagler, who I still believe is Bob Arum's signature client outside of Muhammad Ali, who used to go to these resorts in the wintertime, and it was like the atmosphere was like The Shining with Jack Nicholson. It was all these like rundown old places, and he used to call it jail. Gabe, you had to buy this guy or rent a mansion for him to basically train 2 hours a day. But what an insult to Rocky III, Gabe. I'm ashamed of you, man. I'm telling you, man.
I'm just saying. I'm saying everything that he needs to get on the success track can be found for him in Rocky III. That's, I guess, what I'm saying. He should go home. Go to Nacho Berrastain. Go to somewhere where he's going to learn. But, you know, like you say, I don't think he can. I've watched him. It was that Von Spartan-Erosian fight or the sparring session. I still have it on tape. And he was making moves, just warming up, that a person with an ounce of athletic ability would never make. Like, he looks so awkward. It's just he happened to be born big and strong. He can punch a bit, you know, when he's at the smaller weight and he sucks down.
Yeah, and a Chavez.
Chavez, but he has no footwork whatsoever. It's terrible. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see where he lands.
The fact that Top Rank could actually get this guy to where he got is a testament to men like Bruce Trampler and that matchmaking staff, mm-hmm. because that was an absolute mirage. And to get it as far as they did, and to think he was just a punch or two away from beating a real pro like Sergio Martinez with the way he mm-hmm. prepared for that fight, what a miscarriage of justice that would have been. Gabe, Bob Arum is now talking about, okay, brace yourself, Gabe, because we've all gotten these press releases for the past 10, 15 years. Bob is actually saying he's in discussions to bring fights or a big fight card to Dubois. Now, he got Monaco done, and we all had our fun with Bob, but you know, excuse me, Macau. So with a guy that's done stadium fights, like Yankee Stadium, Cowboy Stadium, he got to Macau. Do we dare doubt Robert J. Arum's new frontier, Dubois?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I never thought Macau would happen, and it has. And I think, you know, there's a lot of money over there. It's you know, one of the more rich cities in the world. Dudes want to see some fights live, and, you know, they come to you, and you've got guys that you can pay to make that happen. I don't see why not. I mean, Bob's legacy, I think, especially now that Pacquiao Mayweather's over, I think it's, what he's been looking to is expanding his company globally and leaving that for Todd and the rest. I mean, he's getting into his 80s, you know, and he's probably thinking about that. I don't know. Nothing would surprise me with Bob Arum. I'm still waiting for the temporary stadium, though. So, you know, we'll see what happens first.
Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya on the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. This show is brought to you by the Iron Gym at 14548 Ventura Boulevard, Sherman Oaks, California. The number to the Iron Gym, 818-322-4627. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you can do so at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. In the next couple of segments, we'll go through the fight review and fight preview. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
516, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, it's Evan Vegas. How you doing?
Good. What's going on, Evan?
You know, what's funny about the PBC for me is that they're so desperate to cater to, you know, to the casual fan, the guy who doesn't watch boxing, that they're alienating the people like myself and the rest of the callers that will ultimately make this series a success. And I know for a fact I'm not staying in at Saturday at noon Pacific time to watch this, you know, to watch this Guerrero card, you know. And I'm the, you know, we're the type of people that watch everything, and I'm not going to watch. I mean, I'll DVR it, maybe watch it on a Sunday at best, you know. And I think they're so desperate to glom onto, you know, to John Q. Public that they're alienating. They're alienating the boxing public, so I don't necessarily understand this strategy on their part.
And Evan, you know what the reality is? Guys, you know what the reality is? Judging by their ratings, they're not even getting the casual sports fan. They're not. So I think Evan makes a great point, and the downfall of the UFC, if you want to call it that, or maybe the decline, is when they got the Fox deal and they started putting their shows on all these different platforms, and something happened. It was called saturation. There was almost too much of it. I think they're at that point.
And I had one question sorry.
Go ahead,
I'm just curious who they're, you know, when you're starting a company like this, like Roc Nation picked up, you know, David Itzkowicz, the people that have been in the business that understand it. You would think, who's their guy within the Al Haymon organization that is, besides Al, the experienced boxing guy with the discerning eye for talent and who knows how to guide his guy from the root to the fruit. Who is that guy in that company?
They do have a matchmaker by the name of John Beninati. But again, I don't know what John's job is. Is it just to match fights against each other or to actually create real attractions? John is an experienced boxing guy, but I don't know how much authority he really has. Evan, your other question.
I'll ask this, then I'll hang up. In regards to Durrell, he's another one of these guys that grew up, or seemingly grew up, trying to emulate Roy Jones Jr., and I haven't seen any development technically from him in 10 years. You know, in the Stevens fight, he's a guy who used his athleticism to run around the ring, and against Miguel, he seemed like a guy who wasn't sure about what style he wanted to implement. Did he want to be a pressure fighter? Did he want to be the guy who want to be a stick and move guy? My question is, you know, Chris Bird made some good points. His second assistant made some good points in terms of strategy in the corner when he was interviewed. But so, do you blame sort of Durrell's inability to be technically sound as the fault of who he has around him and his trainers, or is this just a guy who's unable and unwilling to take good training and take constructive criticism to become a better fighter?
Gabe?
That's a great question. I wonder, he's probably had a lot of different people tell him how to do things, but ultimately nobody really had to tell Miles Davis how to play the trumpet, you know? I think it's Durrell. I think it comes down to the fighter always, you know? I think everybody gives advice. My observance of being around kind of great people or talented people, successful folks, is that they will take advice advice from a bunch of people around them, just hear all the different opinions. But they always do what they were going to do in the first place anyways, like their instinct. And Durrell in there seems to question himself. And I don't know if it's because he's had too many teachers. I always felt that about Oscar. I just think he's unwilling somehow to dive into the breach and really dictate the pace of a fight with his punches, really push forward and come downhill on a guy. Tries to be finesse, and I don't know what he's looking for, but he's not looking to just utterly destroy the guy in front of him by using his hands. And there's some disconnect there. I couldn't tell you what it is, but it seems to me it's him, not anybody around him.
I think Evan made a great point, though, Gabe. There's a guy that was absolutely influenced by Roy Jones, and the way I would describe him is more sizzle than steak, because I tweeted this out in the middle of the fight on Saturday. Nobody has perfected the art of throwing fast, flashy combinations that don't actually land quite like Andre Durrell, and maybe that's why they call him the Matrix. Gabe?
347, you're live on the next round.
What's up, guys? This is Mike from Queens.
Mike, welcome aboard.
How you doing? Guys, I was just wondering, because I don't think much about Andre Durrell because you rarely see him, but was that the injury that he suffered after the Abraham fight, was that real or was that just to get out of Gary Shaw's contract?
The injury was real, though. I've always thought that was a very brutal shot. I really do think he was concussed. Now, whether he used that to get out of the contract, I don't know.
Because he took out of the fight with Andre Ward, and I think Ward would have beat him, but he probably would have got paid well for that. You know what I mean? And he hasn't had it. That's why I picked Durrell to win this fight, because Durrell hasn't been in a real fight in 5 years. You know what I'm saying? This guy came to fight, and then Durrell, like a lot of these Al Haymon fighters, they get surprised when a real fight happens, because it's like, wow, someone came to win this fight, you know?
Yeah, but Mike and Gabe, I want to point out one thing about Andre Durrell. Coming into this fight, he was absolutely medically cleared by Dr. Shaw High.
Yeah, is that kind of the real?
Like a universal life minister as well. That's kind of the shame of the Super Six for Andre Ward, is that Durrell would have been his best opponent, probably his best fight, his toughest fight, and it would have gone a long way with fans. You know, maybe it would have been just an awful fight and super boring, but I tend to think that Durrell was going to be more aggressive and be a problem for him. I was probably the one guy that had the tools to beat him. I don't know what it was. Maybe ever since that injury, I have to go back and look at Andre Durrell fights, and I'm not sure I'm willing to do that. But maybe since the injury, he's been second-guessing himself even more and just unsure.
I remember a fight where Javier Mora fought somebody. It was like back in 2007 or so, and it was on a Fox Sports show. And it was Fresno Kendo Javier Mora, okay? And I believe it was at Pechanga. Andre Durrell fought a very slow Mexican guy who clipped him right on the chin and knocked him down and basically out, and he was saved by the bell. Trust me, guys, he does not have a good chin, and he knows it.
Yeah, it seems that way. Every time he gets hit, he seems a little bit like Andre Berto in a way, too. Like, they both get, like, stunned, like, wow, there's a fight happening right now. So I'm not used to this.
Yeah.
You know?
Resistance.
And I also got another question. I heard you guys talk earlier about Fox Sports and Golden Boy's contract. The Fox Sports One deal is coming up to an end. Do you see that as a PBC takeover, or just Fox Sports want to be out of boxing business?
No, I heard it's going to be PBC. That's the word in the industry.
Oh, okay. Golden Boy, what's going to happen to them, man? It's like,
well, they'll have to adapt and adjust. They're big boys. They want to be in the business, they'll find a way.
Yeah, I guess. I just want to see quality boxing. I don't really care who promotes it nowadays anyway.
Not even if it's free?
Yeah. Well, I'd rather it free, but, I mean, I don't mind paying for Triple G, put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. Mike, thank you for the call.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, before we move on, PBC on Spike, we have Amir Khan, Chris Algieri. I guess it's free, and not that basic cable is free, but I don't see how this fight is any different than Amir Khan's fight against Pauly Malignaggi. I don't see how Algieri can hold off Khan.
Is time really free? I think, yeah, I agree with you. I think this is going to look a lot like that fight. I think, you know, we'll see how durable Chris is and how hard Amir hits. You know, it's a trippy thing with these, you know, with him. It's like he keeps wanting the Mayweather fight, but activity doesn't seem to be a path that he's really willing. You know, he only fought twice last year. He fought once in 2013. It just seems to me that I don't know. I wonder how he's going to be. Is he getting the most out of himself by just training and training and training and waiting? But here he is. You know, I think he'll probably put it on Chris Algieri. I don't think he stops, and maybe early the speed of Khan will catch Algieri off balance. But I don't know. It's a tough fight. I thought it's kind of a funky matchup, but it's hard to say if it's going to go the distance because I'm still figuring out Amir Khan at this weight.
Well, I'm going to miss it because I'll be in Memphis calling the Latif Coyote fight. So that's the pinnacle right there. Anyway, moving on, 347-215-7598. If you want to send us a question via Twitter, you could do so at SteveUCNLive, Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe?
Who do you like in the Brian Vasquez-Javier Fortuna fight?
You know what? I'm going to go with Vasquez. I wouldn't bet my life on it. It's a nice little matchup, certainly an improvement over Malignaggi O'Connor. But Javier Fortuna is one of these guys. He's very hot and cold. He's either spectacular early on, blows you out of there, or he just kind of goes on interminably. And Vasquez is a pretty good operator, but he's going to have to deal with that southpaw style. So, honestly, if I had any money, I wouldn't bet on that fight. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I like Vasquez, too. I think he needs to close the distance and catch Javier Fortuna when he lets his hands go, because the kid – he just gets wider and wider and more squared up the longer he goes, you know, on a punch flurry. And it's, yeah, I think he could. I don't trust his whiskers to get him all the way through against a durable guy like Vasquez. I'm gonna go with Vasquez like late, just kind of surprising, like 8-round knockout, something like that. Let's see, we've still got a few more callers. 860 CT, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing tonight?
Good. What's going on?
I just wanted to talk about the Durrell fight with DeGale Smith. I'm saying the DeGale fight now. I was a little frustrated because coming into the fight, you know, I'm high on Durrell because I think he's one of the most physically gifted athletes as far as offensively. So I like to watch him fight. But it's frustrating to me when I see a guy who has all the physical gifts, but coming into this fight against a guy who's just durably stronger and maybe more hard. But I saw the difference between punch and power, you know, in almost every exchange. Every time I saw the Gale land, it hurt Durrell, and I think that played a big part in the fight.
See, T, though, couldn't you argue that's a difference in chin? Because I'm telling you, yeah. I don't think that Durrell has that much punch resistance.
You're right. You're right. And especially when he kept pulling backward, he kept doing the same bad habits as he's always done. Is that comes along with a lot of athletic fighters sometimes. They kind of feel like their legs are so, you know, fast, they can just get out of the way using their leg movement and just pulling their head straight back. When that's when they most likely get caught. Zab Judah sometimes does the same thing. But I give all the credit to DeGale. He fought a very good fight, and he swept the last two rounds.
You would think a guy with a bad chin would have better mechanics about his chin, like that pulling straight back with his chin going straight up. I don't understand it. Like, he doesn't tuck his chin. Like, Lennox Lewis learned how to guard his chin. He knew he could get knocked out, and he adjusted. He still could have offense. Something else going on with Durrell. I don't know. Maybe he's just not that good, ultimately. The man is not the, you know.
Well, no, but maybe as CT said, and I don't know if he's completely saying this, but I've always thought he's a part of a group of modern-day fighters that is a better athlete than fighter. Because some of the best fighters in the world never shot a basketball. They couldn't swing a baseball bat. Probably couldn't catch a football. You know what they know how to do? Fight.
No, it's true. I was talking to somebody at the gym, and they were saying the same thing, in that, you know, the guys watch a Floyd, and they try to mimic the style of somebody. They don't understand how they got to that style, you know. And I think that's, yeah, it's very important. You got to, you know, like Picasso, his dad would make him, like, draw a hand, like, over and over and over again until he mastered how to make it look real. And he would say, like, the only until you master the rules can you break the rules. And as you agree with you, there's a generation of guys that just got that low lead hand because of Roy Jones or whoever, and they're trying to just use athleticism, the one shot and done highlight reel KO, and it just isn't going to get it done. I look at DeGale that way. It's why I picked against him with Groves, and I picked against him here against Durrell. It's a lot of sizzle, not a lot of steak.
CT, anything else?
Yeah, I'm definitely agreeing with you guys on the fight this coming weekend. I definitely think it's going to be somewhat of a Amir Khan versus Malignaggi, where Amir Khan usually does better against fighters who definitely can't hurt him. So I think he's going to be more aggressive in this fight. He may be able to get a stoppage. He might be able to one-up Pacquiao because of the simple fact his arms are longer. And he kind of, I think they'll have a big part in this fight. I think Algeria have his moments to an extent, but for the most part, I think Khan will stop him like around the 10th round, maybe on cuts.
I don't disagree. And Gabe, the other issue is the one Achilles heel of Amir Khan is the chin. Gabe, anyone can hurt anybody, but let's just put it this way. Algeria's not swinging a Louisville slugger. It's more of a wiffle bat. He may not even be able to dent the chin of Amir Khan.
It's kind of like a nerve punch. Well, here's the thing. Yeah.
Love Nerf as a kid. Love Nerf.
I'm a big fan of him. They should have made a boxing glove. Although, you know, I like Chris. And he got blown out by Pacquiao, but he didn't get stopped. I'll give him that. It's the one positive I guess you can take away. But he said to me that, you know, yeah, I don't have a lot of knockouts, but, you know, people, when I hit them, they respect it. And they don't just walk right through me. I think Pacquiao's speed, though, was the big issue. And Khan, I think, feels stronger at 147. And he's certainly, I think, faster than Pacquiao. I remember watching him in the gym. You've seen him. He's pretty ridiculously fast. And his hands blur on the pads. So I think that's going to be the big problem. And really just the size. I think Amir just is going to be the stronger, bigger man. But, yeah, anything's possible with that chin.
CT, anything else?
That's it. Thank you.
All right, CT, thank you for joining us here on this Memorial Day evening. If you want to call in, we still have a few minutes at the very least, 347-215-7598, Steve K9 Kim, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya on the next round. Gabe?
This is a blocked number. It might be 418. I'm not sure. You're live on the next round. Anything?
Hey, guys.
No?
How you doing?
Yo, who is this?
Hey, how you doing?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
You're on.
Yeah, yeah, not bad. Kevin Ioli broke a story last week in regards to Mayweather receiving a QE for some vitamins. Floyd always says that he walks around at 147, 148, 149. So it just seems a bit weird, you know, him wanting it for rehydration purposes. What was your thoughts on that?
Now, was it Kevin Ioli that broke the story, Gabe, or was it Thomas Hauser? Didn't Hauser talk about the QE that he got?
Well, Hauser broke the story that it was a retroactive therapeutic use exemption that USADA, the way Tom put it down, was that USADA and Mayweather came to Pacquiao with this retroactive TUI, but he didn't say what the drug was for, and I'm not sure if they said what the drug was, what the TUI was for, you know, the therapeutic use exemption. And Pacquiao's team rejected it, and they came back with another contract, and it all worked out. But, you know, maybe I'm misunderstanding. Maybe he did get the TUI, but Ioli is saying that it was a TUI for these saline bags so that Mayweather could rehydrate after the weigh-in. And it was, you know, one bag had, like, vitamin C in it. The other bag had some other minerals in it. But it seems to me that that's actually still breaking WADA code. So because they don't allow – they have, like, a no-needle policy. They don't allow you to just inject a bunch of – I think anything more than 50 nanograms or something like that, 50 milligrams of a substance – anything beyond that is illegal, and it sounds to me like they did way more than that. And this claim that Floyd's coming in like 149, Pacquiao came at 152. Just looking at them, did they look like they weighed the same, or that Mayweather weighed less? I think he looked like he weighed like 163. To me, I always say this, like liars kind of always give you a little bit of the truth within their lie, so they're more comfortable making the lie. I think they do saline bags, and that's how Floyd rehydrates to probably 163, 165 on fight night. There's other prominent boxers do it. You know, one I know does it for a fact, claimed to be that he didn't, but I know he's not telling me the truth. I can't think of a group of people that lies more about their weight than fighters, or maybe wrestlers do. I just think, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying that that's what it's for. Maybe I'm just a hater, but it seemed strange to me that the story wasn't a bigger story, this QE thing. It doesn't surprise me that Kevin Ioli is the one that's coming forward with kind of the press release answer.
And by the way, USADA would never bend its rules for Floyd Mayweather. Never. Anyway. Anything else we can do for you?
Let me throw this at you. When I heard this story, it reminded me of the first negotiations, and I had talked to somebody in Top Rank who came up to me that was part of those negotiations, and they said, you know, here's the thing. It wasn't, you know, when we first started with USADA, it was our way or the highway, and then Pacquiao balked at it about, you know, giving blood too soon to the fight. And they came back with these cutoff dates, and this person said it was at that point that we went, well, what are we really getting into here? If it's our way or the highway, or oh, we're losing the business, so here's a cutoff date. We'll bend our rules. What other rules are going to get bent? I firmly believe that that's why they balked the first time around. So we got plenty of calls actually. We kind of filled up.
Thanks for the call. We got to get running, Gabe. Let's hit them up.
All right, in the 219. You're live on the next round. 219. Well, knocked out of the night. 310. You're live on the next round. 310. Boom. I am Andre Drill in round two. 951. You're live on the next round. 951.
And they're out of there.
Hello? All right. 312, you're live on the next round.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised at anything I hear coming out of the Mayweather camp. Until you get a commission or somebody that's going to actually enforce some rules, that's the way it's going to always be. as far as the PBC, I think one of the problems with their fighters, I think all their fighters, whenever they fight somebody competitive, because they all seem to regress. They're not getting any better. And I'm waiting for him in his next fight.
Two things to your first point. There's a reason why Mayweather will only fight in Las Vegas. That is his commission. I've said that for a while. Secondly, I think there's a reason why Al Heyman's going to create the PBC belts, because if you look at when Al Heyman fighters are not winning, it's not fights that he makes. They are fights that mandatory positions have made those fights available to happen with the IBF or the WBA or the WBO or the WBC. And so I think that's a very salient point that you make there.
Yeah. Okay, Algeri fighting Khan. I'm gonna pick Algeri. Because I think Khan's going to come in, he's going to try to be impressive, you know, as trying to be the new guy after Floyd in the PBC, and he's going to get caught. I think he's going to come in, Algeria's going to have to try to find him. Khan's going to come to him, he's going to get caught. And I'm going to see Thurman's next fight because I used to think he had it going, he was a bad boy, but in his last couple of fights, it looks like he's actually kind of regressed, and I'm waiting for the other shoe to fall, because I don't know who's in the camps, if they're not, how they're being organized, if everything goes to Heyman, who talks about what and competition, how to train, because they don't seem to be getting any better as fighters. They seem to be actually regressing as fighters, and you know, like Thurman, one-time Thurman, his last, he can't seem to finish anybody. When he's got him in trouble, he doesn't seem to know how to go about trying to finish it. So I think they're going to all start to fade back as they have to, as they fight outside fighters. Heyman's going to have to create a cocoon in order to keep his guys. I think they're going to lose fans there too, because people are going to start wondering why aren't they fighting other fighters outside Heyman's realm.
Well, I think that's already happening. I want to ask you a question as someone who obviously is more than just a casual fan, given the fact you listen to us on a Memorial Day evening. And by the way, thank you very much for that. The PBC let you down in terms of what you were expecting, what you were promised? And do you look at this now 3-4 months later and say, huh, I thought it'd be better than this?
Well, I thought, saw the first broadcast they did, I didn't think it was going to get much better, because it looked like everybody on there, they had credible people who knew boxing, but they all seemed to have a script. They all seemed to come in promoting, not talking about fights, fighters in the realm of fighting. It was all about the PBC and what they're going to do, and this is all it's going to do. And I'm somebody, I also like some ambiance. I like to see some ring girls from time to time, that kind of thing. And it seems like their whole idea about the when they talk about the hardcore fan, and I've listened to some other shows that kind of promote PBC as being the new wave of the future, and the way they talk about hardcore fans, and it's almost funny to me, because I almost get the impression that the hardcore fan is a bunch of guys who get around, watch the TV, the pants pulled down around their ankles, and they're masturbating to the fight as anything else. You know, it's almost strange.
Wait a minute. Do they have a cam to my living room? What the hell's going on here?
Because I know one time somebody said something about they'd like to see some ring girls. They'd like to see some ring girls. Who needs ring girls? Nobody needs ring girls. You know, these are fighting. And I'm almost thinking, I'm saying, wow, you know, this is so strange. You know, they're sitting there just kind of getting off on each other. And I'm saying, I don't want to be that hardcore about anything.
When I said, Gabe, when I talk about fixing boxing, I've never said, you know what, let's sterilize the ring walks. Let's have no entourages. Let's have no ring girls. Let's have no Michael Buffer. That'll fix boxing. Give me a break. I look at those handicap ramps that these guys come down. It's like, come on down. Yeah. You're on the PBC. That just looks stupid to me.
They look lonely. You know, the guys almost look like the deer's headlights kind of walking down there, and the announcers are trying. The funniest thing about that Durrell fight was when Sugar Ray Leonard was trying to tell you about how Durrell was setting him up, how he's setting up the guard, and then all of a sudden he got caught, and Durrell hit the canvas. And I'm saying, you know, I said, it's almost like they have the scripts in front of them, then sometimes you got to throw the script aside and say, ah, this isn't going to work.
What about when Ray Leonard, who I have a lot of respect for, but I think has been disappointing, he kept giving credit, to Peter Quillin for being focused after he's the one who missed weight against Andy Lee. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, Ray, how about giving credit to the guy, Andy Lee, who actually made weight? Hello?
Well, yeah. Well, he knows who the A-side is in the fight, the guy who they're trying to promote, the guy who's going to be the next PBC champion. And he's
there's no doubt about
it. He's going to listen to him. Yeah. So, I don't – well, we'll see what's going to happen. I'm going to see what happens with Khan, and I want to see Thurman in his next fight and what goes on from there.
Well, my other question is, before we let you go, has the PBC made you appreciate the other side of boxing, like the stuff that you actually see on, let's say, HBO this year?
Yeah, I like HBO a lot more than the PBC.
I just find it interesting that they've had an uptick in ratings during this stretch. And I don't think it has anything to do with that. Well, Al Heyman's bringing more attention to boxing. It's like, oh, you really? Get out of here with that.
Strong brands have been fighting. Yeah. Strong brands have been fighting. They're action fights. That's what people want. And quality action fights.
Yeah. And I don't think Heyman's looking for that. Okay.
No, he's not.
No.
Thank you for the call. 347-215-7598. We have up to 29 minutes remaining here on this Memorial Day edition of the Next Round. Gabe?
Let me clean up this, just my facts really quick on this, the 2E question this guy asked, Zubair, I think his name is. Here's the rule from WADA, is that infusions or injections of more than 50 milliliters per six-hour period are prohibited at all times, both in and out of competition, unless the athlete gets a 2E. So that's the WADA rules that USADA follows, right? So what Floyd did was he went to the NSAC and applied for a 2E to take the following. The first was a mixture of 250 milliliters of saline and multivitamins. Second was 500 milliliters, a mixture of saline and vitamin C. He was urine tested before and after taking the substances, and him and Pacquiao tested negative for everything. But because he was doing that, you know, from weigh-in to fight, that's about 36 hours. That's against the rules. And the amount that he's taking is way more than is allowed by WADA. He applied for the 2E with the NSAC. NSAC went, I guess, to USADA or something, and they were like, oh, well, I guess it's okay, and they just let it through. What's the point of having a testing program if it's that easy to just circumvent rules? You know, so
WADA
anyway,
is in there for a reason. Just put it that way. They're there for a reason.
We have four calls left here. Let's see. 804, you are live on the Next Round.
Oh, snap. Hey, Steve, what's up, man?
Good. Who is this?
This is Abiyaz Jesus, man. He blocked me the other day. Or muted me. Yeah, I know. Yeah. We were just talking about it was something like the Triple G and stuff. But I heard you guys talking about PBC, man. I thought I'd call in and talk to you guys about just because I was listening to what you were saying. I just wanted to say I consider myself a hardcore boxing fan, and I'm a little turned off by PBC and like some of the things you guys are talking about. Like I feel like they took the authentic touch of boxing out of it. It's so kind of commercial. It's not the boxing that I grew up liking. It's not the reason why I like boxing. And I think a lot of the new fans who are getting introduced to PBC are getting the wrong impression of boxing. Like, they haven't put on many entertaining fights. It's kind of cheesy, if anything. And quite honestly, it's actually driven me closer to HBO and Showtime, which I don't think is what Al Heyman had intended for people.
You know, here's the thing, though. The Showtime schedule, they literally have one fight. Eric Molina, whose nickname should be the wrong Mexican heavyweight, because if you're going to fight a Mexican heavyweight as Deontay Wilder, it better be Chris Areola, who stopped Molina, I believe, in like one or two rounds. And here's the thing. Porter Broner, you know, putting aside the catch weight, which I think will be an issue, look at the upcoming PBC schedule, and there's a lot of blah. There is. There's just a lot of stuff, and you're like, huh, that's it.
Yeah, I agree. But I don't understand. You guys were talking about PBC belts. Like, what is that about? I haven't heard anything about that. What does that entail? Like, why are they making belts for PBC?
because what they're going to do is, like the UFC, they're going to make themselves insular to everybody else. They're not going to have to fight the Gennady Golovkins as Peter Quillen is their PBC, or Danny Jacobs is their PBC middleweight title. It's like the UFC, you know, a lot of these guys never had to fight someone from Pride or some of these other, you know, MMA guys that were really good, whose names I don't know, but I knew that they were dangerous, and Dana White would say, well, they're not in our association. They don't even exist. So there's we've talked about this, Gabe, for at least 7-8 months, that they were creating their own belts, and there seems to be more and more evidence the belts are coming. The belts are coming.
God, that's trash, man. That's unfortunate. And you know what? I probably need to go on and apologize to Oscar De La Hoya. I did my little bit of trolling, but, I mean, fuck, if he's so aiming to try to stop this shit, then I'm all for it, man. Like, I came in to PBC very optimistic because I wanted boxing in the forefront. I wanted more people to, you know, enjoy the sport for what I enjoy it for, and I don't feel like it's doing what I thought it would do. So it went from me being overjoyed and excited to now I don't even tell my friends when a PBC fight comes on because I'm afraid they're going to get a snooze.
Well, obviously you're a boxing fan. Like, for instance, Friday night, you sound like a young guy. You probably have choices. You have a social life. Friday night, you're like Johnny Kemp. You just got paid. Are you staying inside on a Friday night to watch Khan Algieri?
Heck nah, man. Like, no way. No way. You know what? When I saw that fight announced, I felt bad for Kell Brook just because, like, when your countryman is doing well and you guys are in the same division, you kind of owe one another to fight, you know. Like, it's something that should have been made. And I understand business sometimes gets in the way. But for him to skip him and fight Algieri and then back out saying that, oh, it wasn't announced, and then come back and make it official again, that's awful, man. That's all. And I don't want to disrespect Algieri. I mean, he's making a name for himself, and he's doing the best that he can after the Provodnikov win. But he didn't look good against Manny Pacquiao at all. He doesn't deserve this fight. He doesn't deserve any fight against
him. All right, so let's fast forward to June 6th. I don't know where you live, but are you counting down the minutes for Robert Guerrero, Alan Martinez on NBC?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, I thought Guerrero did very well against Thurman in regards to he survived, and, you know, he still put up a fight. But I'm not looking forward to this fight at all either. And I mean, really, I don't think there's many PBC fights that they can put on with, you know, the matchmaking that would bring a good fight. I feel like guys now are too busy trying to protect their brand. And I blame Floyd for that because he's built the market off of being undefeated and the 48-0 and all that crap, and that's all he puts in people's face. And people think he gets paid because he's undefeated, but he gets paid because people hate him and they want to see him lose. A lot of his money comes from guys getting together to buy pay-per-views because they want him to freaking lose. And I think a lot of the young fighters are not challenging themselves in the way that people used to because they're worried about losing marketability because of a loss. But you don't always lose marketability in a loss. You can still gain marketability if you fight.
Right. Well, I think Floyd has really created something. It's been the genius, you know, with the TBE, the TMT. Here's another question. All right, Thurman Collazo on ESPN, does that pique your interest?
A little bit, just because of Collazo's experience. And I know the guy before me touched on Thurman. I don't know if Thurman's regressing. I just think it comes to a point in a young fighter's career where he's not able to knock out guys the way that he used to and the fashion that he used to. You know, you step up in competition a little bit, people get tougher to knock out. And I think with somebody like Collazo, with his experience and grit, it'll be a good fight for Thurman to work on being more technical, building to a knockout. I think he's used to, you know, he's named one-time Thurman. He's used to hitting somebody one time or two times and they go down. But sometimes you have to build to a knockout. And I think that's the next step in his development, making him, you know, into a premier fighter, is that he's got to learn that not all knockouts come in the first 3 or 4 rounds. He's got to gradually put in work to the body, keep coming with combinations, and work a man down, break him down to get a knockout. And when he gets that, then to me, he'll be almost a complete fighter. And I think that's what he needs to work on. So somebody like Collazo, to me, is a good fight for him at this point in his career.
All right, listen, I appreciate the call. Call again.
Yeah, man, no problem.
Thank you very much. That was a great call there. Gabe, it is interesting. I think this is very instructive. I don't care about the casual sports fan. I think that's still the casual sports fan, in my opinion, will show up to watch the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. I'm not so sure they're making PBC on NBC, CBS, Spike TV, BET, PBC, C-SPAN, or anything else appointment viewing. The ratings are showing that early on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to build an audience. You got to train them where you are, teach them where you're at, you know, and they're not exactly doing that. I mean, Al's never been one to build a guy in one spot, you know. Why is Adrian Broner not fight in Cincinnati on a regular basis and be building a huge fan base there? That's what I don't understand when people say, well, look, Al's doing it different, he's doing it better. The only thing that I see that's better is they're making more money, the fighters. That's about it. Everything else, I mean, I guess the uniform idea, but even, you know, the boxing of our youth wasn't one uniform product. Don King had his way. Bob Arum had his way. Golden Boy never quite didn't have much of a personality to me. It's a weird company to me. But Oscar, you know, it's taken a while to become comfortable being in the lead, and Schaefer was just awkward, just always so awkward.
And then those really, like, those dressing rooms with the red and the blue. I mean, what are you housing? The Bloods and the Crips? I don't know. I'm just not a fan of it.
It's a lot of it. If it's not broke, don't fix it. It's not. There's something inorganic about it, you know? It's like, would it take more stars in the audience? No, I don't need corporate tie-ins either. There's just something not gritty about it. It's like, it is like the difference between like a smelly boxing gym and working out at 24-hour fitness, I guess. I don't know. We got three more calls. 917, you are live on the next round.
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yes, what's going on?
I can.
Hey, man, this is Joe from Yonkers. I'm calling. First time talking to you guys. I've been listening to you guys since you started. I've been reading you guys for years, man.
Thank you.
Right on.
I just want to touch on briefly. Gabe, we had met years ago at Sergio Martinez, Paul Williams 2, and in talking about what you're saying about the PBC, really, Al Haymon honestly needs to go sit down and watch that fight on so many levels. First of all, two top elites challenging themselves. Second of all, I was in the media room that night. The press could not decide who was going to win. They were so up in the air about it. The air of anticipation from the crowds to go see that. None of that stuff goes on whatsoever in the PBC, and they're just not getting it. They're thinking if there's mass quantity, that everything is going to be okay, and obviously we're all seeing it's just not working. So,
you know, it's funny, too. That environment, remember, it wasn't like this super packed room. I mean, it was a pretty good crowd, but it felt like more Haymon, you know, like if Martinez didn't exactly have the strongest, you know, the most money behind him to, like, really promote him super big. That
for
fight
sure
was kind of under the radar a bit, is how it felt out there.
Yeah.
But what was your other point?
My other point was, and because I came to the show late, I didn't get a chance to hear it. I'm just wondering if you had talked about I'm seeing a lot on the internet, people are saying, man, I really hope George Groves beats Badu Jack so we can have the rematch of DeGale and Groves. Guys, I am a diehard, hardcore fan. I watch everything. And when I tell you, George Groves, James DeGale was such a terrible fight. My wife, who doesn't watch boxing, I was watching it. It was like 5 p.m. I'm watching it on my cell TV. And she's like, this is terrible. What are you watching? I don't need that rematch. That's all I want to say is, like, man, if they both win, let's just keep going their separate ways, for God's sake. That was some serious hot brain for 12 rounds.
Joe, I said that when this fight happened, I thought it was great that they fought, but I thought it was too soon. And it was just two underdeveloped guys fighting. And that's one of the things where the fans say, don't let it marinate, don't let it marinate. Listen, you jagoff, sometimes fights need to marinate. Yeah. I want to see fights at their best, at their optimal level. And to me, when they're both fighting at around 15-0, you kind of saw what happened. I think the problem now with that fight is I think George Groves is very, I don't want to say faded. Boy, there's a lot of wear and tear on him, though, post-Frotch.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I mean, in talking what in continuing what you're saying, you know, it's not just, you know, in my opinion as a fan, you know, it's not just that they were underdeveloped as fighters. They were underdeveloped as draws. And, I mean, yes, they definitely had a bunch of people there at the first fight because it was an all-British clash. But it wasn't – if they hadn't built themselves into their own identities as their own individual stars. So it was super early. I'm with you. I'm okay with fights waiting a little bit. I mean, not everything is going to become Gamboa, Ponce, or Lopez.
Juanma.
Yeah, not everything's going to be that way if you wait. Sometimes it will, but other times you build it into something bigger. That's a good thing.
So if you're from Yonkers, are you going to Khan Algieri at the Barclays Center?
Man, I don't want to curse, but the only way I can say it is, fuck no, man.
Okay, hold on. What if one iota gave you 10 tickets for you and your friends and a minivan and an Uber?
Man, I'm a professional drummer. I'd rather go out and make some music and make some money than spend my hard-earned cash trying to convince all my friends that they didn't just waste their time watching a posture fest. Like, it was, I have to say, I'm really glad I had such a great party on the night of May 2nd. That, in and of itself, because everybody had such a good time, it was a good mix of people, the alcohol and other activities were flowing heavily, nobody complained how terrible the fight was because the party was good. I don't need that stress as a fight fan to bring my buddies out to a fight and watch Khan and Algieri dance around all night. People want to see people get, you know, their lights turned out, and that's not going to happen.
Joe, have you gone to any PBC cards, and do you plan to?
As of right now, no, because the only one that seems slightly interesting is Porter versus Broner. But again, it's a catch weight. Let's see how we can, you know, marginalize, give all the advantages to Broner, who is such a clown. And honestly, he's a good fighter, but he's not an elite guy. And they still won't let it go and realize, you know, somebody like Thurman or Kell Brook. I mean, I know he's not PBC, but, I mean, Thurman is so much more the goods than Broner is, yet they're still carrying this on. Like Broner's going to actually just, one day, it's going to happen. He's just going to mature. He's going to be great. He's going to just really get it together and stop being what he is. It's not happening.
I'm in the minority. I kind of dig Broner, and I hope it never happens. I mean, seriously, he's one of the few guys in the PBC that has a personality that actually stands out. And to see them trying to neuter him, to me, is kind of sad. But anyway, Joe, we got to get running, okay? Please call in soon.
Thanks so much, guys.
All right, we have about 12 minutes left. 347-215-7598. This show definitely does not want to thank Al Haymon. Gabe, who's next?
You know, I'm curious. We actually did do a breakdown of the Friday night fights also, but why is it that the Bob Arum or Top Rank always gets blamed for Juanma Gamboa not happening? If that fight was a super fight, it would have happened, right? I mean, a super fight happens.
Neither guy was as good as we thought,
fights.
By the way. Yeah.
Yeah. It happens when you win all your fights and then you meet.
No, but those are people complaining that we didn't match two undefeated guys together. So I never look back at my boxing career at ringside and say, God, man, it's just really too bad I was never at Gamboa, Juanma, when they were both undefeated. I'm over it. At the end of the day, if they were the good, the fight would have happened. And Bob made it very clear. If HBO wants to put out a certain amount of money, I'll do the fight at this point. There were economic realities that prevented the fight. from happening. And by the way, we got to see the rise of Orlando Salido. You know what? I'm good with that. I'm sorry. Gamboa, to me, he's okay. Salido, I'm a Siri guy. Gabe, talking about Boxino, John Thompson and Andrei Fedosov win it. And I'm sure they're going to parlay the Boxino titles into something bigger and better. How much are you going to miss ESPN's Friday night fights?
It's, you know, I mean, it's been a part of our lives for so long. I mean, it's the mainstay, you know. As long as I can remember, just, you know, Friday after work or whatever, before we're going out, you put the fights on and you watch them when they're on, or going to them, having them in our city. I just remember seeing whenever you saw that, like, Teddy was in town, or seeing a fight, you know, being able to see it live, covering it, or as a fan, it was just made it special. You know, Teddy's still going to be there. I mean, there's still going to be, you know, honestly, even watching this last one, it's the same thought I've had week after week watching Friday Night Fights. More Joe, less Teddy. He just goes on incessantly. But I guess we'll still have that with the free PBC on ESPN.
I'm going to miss it because it gave a structure. It was there. The fights were not the greatest. The budget simply didn't allow it, but it was a great news portal. It would cover other fights. And now that it's part of the PBC, I just wonder, will they even mention fighters that are on HBO or fighters that are with top rank or main events? That's what I want to see the tenor of what the announcers say, because there's no doubt on these other platforms, the PBC announcers, they are pro-PBC to a point. They're doing propaganda. Gabe, let's try to fit in a couple more calls.
Yeah. I wonder if you'll get something like John Thompson, who's the story of this last Boxino tournament. A guy that was like short-notice opponent, ends up winning in his division. Would a guy like that be able to exist within the PBC kind of quartered-off universe? I don't know. Last caller, 740. You're live on the next round.
Hi, good evening. How are you guys doing?
Good. What's going on?
Hey, listen, I have a question. This weekend's fights, you had DeGaulle and Durrell. And did anybody notice that after the second round, after the two knockdowns, that was a long in-between rounds? I counted at least a minute 30.
A minute? Really? A minute 30?
Yeah.
I have to go back to that. I'm telling you what, it didn't seem all that long to me.
Yeah.
Gabe, did you notice anything?
No, it didn't seem long to me at all. But I'll go back and watch it. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, it seemed like they were, you know, could have been a little hometown, you know, favoritism, that the guy kind of regrouped for a little bit. And I've noticed that because I watch a lot of the PBC on DVR, and I'll just fast forward, and it seems like, you know, it's a 30-second fast forward, you know. And each time I do it, the round hasn't started, the next round. So it's very interesting dynamic in terms of that. Wait a minute.
If you're fast forwarding through all the PBC stuff, you're missing a lot of great PBC ads for Omar Figueroa, Andre Durrell, and Errol Spence. You do know that, right?
Yeah, I get your point. Hey, listen, I'm not going to take a whole lot of your time,
TV.
But I want to ask you one question.
Yes.
Am I in the minority in terms of Michael Buffer's elongated announcements of these fights in terms of – I've never heard a ring announcer – announce a trainer before. What is your opinion on it?
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. I know he's done it before, but I mean, he gets paid a lot, and maybe he's trying to give the promoters and the networks their money's worth. But I did notice in the Golovkin Monroe fight that he did announce who their trainer was. You know, listen, I like Michael Buffer. I know he's not for everybody, but I will say this. Him and Lennon have set a very high standard, and as it relates to Michael Buffer, when he says his trademark phrase, which I cannot say because I don't want to get charged, there's an electricity in that venue. But I do agree with you. I don't need to know who the trainer is of the guy that everyone came to watch fight. It is not the trainer.
I'm just going to make one comment. Give me Chuck Hall. I know the gentleman's deceased, but give me Chuck Hall any day of the week.
Chuck Hall. You know what? Give me a little Ed Darien.
Ed Darien, he was okay, yeah.
Boy, how old are you to be able to remember old Chuck Hall, back when Chuck Minka ran the Vegas Commission?
I'm 51 years old. I've been taping fights since the early 80s, watching fights on the big dish, closed circuit, those kind of things. So I go back to that kind of stuff, old school. So,
you want more of the PBC?
My opinion on the PBC is, you know, I remember the network fights in the early 80s, and a lot of those guys, you know, like your Ray Mancini, even Ray Leonard, they were being promoted. So it's not an uncommon ground here what they're doing, I guess. So they have their house fighters, and even back then there was house fighters, I guess.
But you know what the difference is? They had real promoters. They didn't have these puppets who just sat in the front row with a credential. I mean, Ray Mancini had a real manager in Dave Wolf. He had Top Rank. And Ray Leonard had Mike Trainer and various promoters. I think that element, that's another thing that's being missed about the PBC. You can have all the dates that you want, but if you don't have old-school professional development of talent and procuring a certain type of fan base and developing as a draw, I don't care how many dates you have. It's going to fall short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
The lack of free will. I mean, you look at the Porter Broner fight. I want to know who made those decisions in terms of the weight. Was it one guy, or did both camps talk about it and agree on it? And I think that's an important thing. The fighters, if you're telling me that this is a better way, then why does the fighter still seem to have actually less say than he did before? What were you going to say?
No, I was just, it is interesting that this Al Haymon kind of gets away with being what I consider a promoter. So it is interesting, and maybe we'll see something come out of these investigations.
All right. Thank you very much. And before we go, Gabe, one last point about that. I remember a couple of months ago, the purse bid for DeGale Durrell took place, and it was won by Warriors Boxing, led by Leon Margulies. The promoter, head promoter this past weekend, Lou DiBella. Huh. That's interesting, isn't it, Gabe?
It totally looked like one of their promotions, too. It just had all the...
You mean empty? Yeah, empty, no atmosphere. Yeah.
Ramps, the big giant screen. I always remember in those promotions that they had that. They had that at, you know, Paul Williams, Sergio Martinez, too. Oh, wait a minute. They didn't have any of that.
They didn't. Same empty seats, though. Same empty seats. All right. Well, that's it for this week's edition of the Next Round, brought to you by Iron Gym at 14548 Ventura Boulevard, Sherman Oaks, California. The number to the Iron Gym, 818-322-4627. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.